I do something and I'm like, that's stupid, notebook garbage, and I get so upset.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks. Geeks Without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, Geeky Boners! We talk about Stephen King book, The Talisman, cooking reality shows, and Destiny. Not fate, but a video game called Destiny.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Tim Wick.
That's me.
And Molly Glover.
Hello.
And it's a Geeky Boners episode.
Boy, yeah.
So hard. We're going to talk about all of the nerdy stuff that has us hard.
Super, like, stiff. Throbbing.
Super nerdy stiff.
Like, I'm so hard, you guys.
Nerdy stiff.
Nerdy
stiff.
Like, hard like Klingon alcohol.
Hard like watching Seven of Nine take off that jumpsuit.
She never took off that jumpsuit, did
no.
she?
No. Probably so. Not.
Hard like trying out for a sports team.
Yeah, hard like so, coming up with the next reference to what it's hard like.
Something that's nerdy and also hard. Like a rock collection.
Hard like Dustin Diamond. he played Screech.
So we're looking for a new third host. To replace Molly.
I think to replace all of us, quite frankly, at this point.
Yes, that joke's taken, and it's not very funny anyway.
So, Molly, what's your boner this week?
All right, so I don't want to say I've gotten back into reading because it sounds like I stopped reading for a while, but I've just kind of gotten more into, I've been trying to steer away from being on the internet as much and being on my phone all the goddamn time. And so, like, I'm trying to just sort of, like, I'm on screens all day at work, and I'm reading. And I've read through a bunch of stuff lately and burned through a bunch of new books, but I am going back to Stephen King, as I always do. When I need something to read, I'll just go stand in front of the bookshelf and look, and it usually ends up being a Stephen King book because I know what I'm getting into, and, you know, there's so many that you can't read them all that quickly. So I'm rereading The Talisman, which is by Stephen King and Peter Straub. It's one of two books they wrote together in the same world, and it's every inch the book that I remember it being, which is amazing. I read it, the first time I read it, I was, I want to say 9 years old. It's one of the first ones I read. Hmm. And it's the story of Jack Sawyer, who is 12 years old, and he and his mother, scene open on them at the Alhambra, which is a hotel in New Hampshire. And he doesn't know why they're there, but he can tell his mom is running. Like, they are running. And you find out, it's most of the story is told through kind of back, like, it's a very glimpsy story, if that makes sense. Like, you mm-hmm. don't, it's not just all laid out. It's like glimpse of what's happening, and you start to put the pieces together, and you start to understand this whole cloth backstory. And it is related to the Dark Tower series in that, like, the way like something like 30 of his books are. Jack Sawyer has the ability, or gets the ability, to flip between worlds. And so on the level, if you think of the Dark Tower, what it is it's like every level of the tower is another plane of existence, another dimension that's similar to, or lies right alongside ours. In The Talisman,
it's the axis around which the multiverse turns.
Sort of, yeah. And in The Talisman, our world, you know, what they call in the Dark Tower Keystone Earth, but our world has a direct link to another world called the Territories, and it's a more 1-to-1 ratio. It's a very, like, it's and so in this world, when Jack is flipping back and forth, he only ever goes between these two worlds. It's not like he's going to all sorts of dimensions or anything like that. It's just these two worlds, and everyone has a twinner in the Territories. Everyone does, unless your twinner died, in which case now you're single natured, and that gives you different powers. So, it's really cool. And his mother is dying, and his mother's twinner is the queen of the other world, and she is dying. And so he kind of has to go on this epic journey across the country.
Is he like 10 or something? He's 12.
Hitchhiking and walking and getting from New Hampshire to California to retrieve the talisman, which he doesn't even know what he's going to do when he gets there. All he knows is he has to go get it because that's what's going to save his mother. And by that, Queen Laura Lothian and the world, I mean, and the universe, the multiverse, the axis of all things. Right. It's a very like, if you don't do this thing, like literally everything as we know it will end. So it's really well written. It's got a lot of heart. The main character is so great, and he's a kid, but he's wise beyond his years. It's a very mature kids book is the best way I can put it. I think it's like young adult fiction, but it's horrific. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of really horrific shit that goes on, so it would never be classified as young adult fiction. But when I know people who have kids that are between 10 and 14 years old, like I bet Alex would love it.
Probably.
I really do. And I think that it's the kind of book that you read as that age, and it's formative. I mean, it sticks with you. There's great morals about, you know, sticking to your guns and doing what you need to do to make people, you know, to save the world. And, you know, he puts a lot of his fears behind. It's really great. And I have my copy, the copy I'm reading is the same copy that I've had since I was 9 or 10, which is technically my mom's, but I stole it and it's mine now. And
a lot of her
Stephen King books were like, they were like 80s paperbacks.
You moved out of the house and she's like, where did all the books go?
Well, she had
It's got like the tape on the inside of the cover is almost orange, it's so yellow.
Yeah, masking tape. Huh. So it's been glued and taped in the inside with masking tape. And then the outside, in like 1998 or 1999, I had to just like, with clear packing tape, just go over the whole spine of the paperback. Because it's a mass market. It's a little fat paperback. It's not one of the nice trade ones. So and it's got this super 80s-tastic cover, like a broken, like orange mirror design kind of thing. And like, and I just, it's my book. I mean, it's so great to read it. And I'm in the bathtub and I'm slouched down with my head on the ridge of the bathtub and my feet are up and I'm reading it in the exact same position I've been reading it in the bathtub since 1989, you know, 88, whatever, you know, and I still cry every time at this one part. And I can't, even though when it's coming up, I'm like, okay, it's coming up. I know what's happening. I'm not going to cry this time. And I still well up a little bit because it's just, I don't know if it's just now that it's just in my muscle memory. But
yeah, it could be. I've watched Shawshank Redemption, I don't know how many times, and the end of that movie makes me cry every time.
You just, it's even like, you know,
I get all misty. I'm like, finally. Yeah, choked. Red, exactly, man. That's right. You hope.
Yeah.
Are you going to read the sequel after you read
it? So the sequel is Black House, and I've read it a couple times. It's very good. It's different. It's a different book.
It's a different kind of story.
Yeah, The Talisman is an epic adventure, kind of, you know, boy's life adventure, you know, meeting goods on the road and things are crazy and there's horror and everything. But then Black House is more like more of a serial killer.
Yeah, mystery.
Mystery, but also other dimensional
kind of stuff. It kind of reminds me of American Gods. Parts of it, subplots.
Yeah, and the supernaturalness. So in Black House, which is the sequel, Jack is an adult. And the shit that happened when he was a kid, he has sort of stuffed to the very far back of his brain as this magical story he made up in his head because his mom was dying and he was scared. Hmm. And he doesn't believe, and he has also sort of gone a little crazy. And I like when Stephen King did that with Dr. Sleep, which is the sequel to The Shining. Similar, the little boy in The Shining in Dr. Sleep is now an adult, and it's like trying to, like, it's this idea of, okay, so these are people, and this happened to a person, and then they had to go live the rest of their fucking life, like, knowing that this, like, 6 days or whatever occurred to them, and your brain would shut it down and tell you that it didn't happen. I mean, that's what it would do. So, I don't know, I love it, and it makes me feel both like a kid again and also just, like, super connected to who I am as a person, kind of like it does when I run. I mean, it's just reading Stephen King and running are like the two things that when that's happening, it's like, this is who I've always been.
Dr. Sleep just came out recently.
Yeah, like Dr. Sleep was his, not his most recent release, but the second most recent. Okay. It came out last year.
Huh. So, Tim, what's giving you a pork sword this week?
Wow.
Throbbing.
If it's a pork sword, I know that you won't eat it. Anyway.
It's true, he doesn't.
Yeah, no, I don't.
Me, though.
Giant on swine.
Gobble it down.
So,
Wait, did I just say it would blow Tim?
Yeah.
Damn it, that's not binding Tim.
Speaking of pork, I'm kind of embarrassed, but here's the deal. We our TV, our old TV, we had a 65-inch projection TV. It died about a month and a half ago. It died while we were visiting Yellowstone. We came home, we're like, fuck, our TV's broken. We tried to see if we could get it repaired, but bummer. It's an old projection TV, and the parts, they didn't even make the part that we needed to fix it anymore. So we replaced it with a brand new flat screen, 65-inch, super high def.
I mean, welcome to the millennium. Amazing.
You got a 4K TV, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, we got a 4K TV. Yeah, it's really fucking awesome. And with the new TVs these days, they all connect up to the internet. They all got wireless, so I'm like, sweet.
Mm-hmm. Hear that, man? TVs these days hook up to the internet.
Well, I know.
I know, it's fucking insane.
It is.
So, I was excited because since we don't get cable, I can still watch, like, Colbert and the Daily Show in high def, and I've been Hulu surfing just when I'm sitting down. I have dinner late, and so I kind of sort of have been getting hooked on cooking shows, which is just kind of messed up. I started by watching MasterChef, which is currently going on. It's in its sixth season, which is the only season that you can watch on Hulu and Netflix, which kind of pisses me off.
The new season.
Is that the competition?
Yes. It's
the one that Allison and... not Alice. That's her character name. Ange and Marie were both on.
Oh, right.
Yep.
Oh, were they actually on that show?
Marie was on the show. No, it was both MasterChef. Ange, they both tried out, and I think Ange didn't quite make it all the way through to the television part, and Marie made it through to the actual like television part. But she's you see just for a second she gets cut because she had a dessert. I don't know. There's a whole thing, but
pineapple cake looked like a fart or something.
They were really awful to her about it. Like it was.
That's what the show's all about.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like if they're just like really pleasant and saying, oh well, that sure didn't work. You're out of here. TV. No. They gotta tell you that if you made a piece of shit, they're gonna say you made a piece of shit.
Even if you made it something
tasty,
that's not entirely a piece of shit, they might tell you it's a piece of
shit. Exactly.
Yeah, you don't know. But so there's MasterChef, and then that got me into looking at Hell's Kitchen, which Pat and I have been watching.
I love Hell's
Kitchen. The seasons. We started with the current season, which just ended, and then we've been walking back to the beginning season by season.
That's the one the British guy that takes off his shirt all the time?
Yeah, that's Gordon Ramsay.
Right. Gordon Ramsay, who swears a lot and gets really really angry at people. And then we just started watching Top Chef, and it's just like there's this horrible rabbit hole of once you started watching one, you're like, well, if you like this show, maybe you like this
show. Top Chef is the one that has Colicchio.
That's the one we watched.
We used to watch that.
Well, we just watched season one. We're in the middle of watching season one. We have two episodes left. And the thing that bugs me about that one is they have basically a spokesmodel as their spokesperson.
Yeah. Oh.
And she is the most vapid, awful spokesperson ever.
Do you mean the chick with the scar down her arm?
No, I don't think so.
Not Lakshmi or whatever.
Because it looks like they have a new person in the second season. Because my problem with her is that she has the worst, most boring delivery ever. It's like, good morning, chefs. Welcome to your next challenge.
Mm.
And you're just like, you are really fucking bored with this whole thing, aren't you? The only reason you're here is because they're giving you a paycheck. The idea of people cooking in a competition does not excite you at all.
So to be fair, Top Chef was, I think, the first cooking reality competition show.
Well, it looks like it. We're watching season one, and they're using flip phones and shit.
Yeah,
and
like, yeah.
Look at how old this is.
I remember when it came out. I watched it when I was in Chicago, I want to say. Or maybe we were together then.
Is it just reality cooking shows that you're watching?
It's pretty much the competition stuff, which, because I get interested in the narrative, and Pat and I will sit there and we'll watch the way they do their little interviews in the beginning, and we'll be like, oh, they're going home today.
Yeah, right.
You know, because, oh, they're this person that we haven't seen.
Oh, did you hear that music?
Yeah.
Oh, they played the sad music.
I was talking about how important it is that her kids see her succeed.
Like, yeah. Like, oh, you're going to fail hard today, lady.
Yeah.
And then there's the way they edit together, like the previews, that I just find fascinating, because they'll edit it together and they'll make it look like this dude is in all sorts of fucking trouble, and then you watch it the next week and it's all editing. He's never going to be in trouble that week.
The comments were actually spoken to someone entirely differently.
But they show the comment and then they show a shot of this guy looking worried. And it's like the only reason this guy's looking worried is because he's like, wow, that Ramsay is freaking out over here with Mike, and I'm on the other side of the kitchen just cooking my fish and being all happy with it. And the crazy thing about it is I'm not like a big foodie. I mean, half the dishes that they cook that they're talking about how they look and taste amazing, I'm like, I would never eat that.
Yeah.
So it doesn't interest me at all. But the whole idea of these challenges is just really fascinating to me, how they come up with these weird ways to test people's cooking skills, and mm-hmm. how people are gaming each other, and the game theory that they're doing, and that sometimes they're clearly, you know, there's you know, the stupid thing that everybody does is when there's somebody who's clearly better than everybody else. This is happening on the current MasterChef season, where there's like one girl who's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And so every time there's an opportunity to hand her some kind of handicap, they do, and she completely knocks it out of the park.
Yeah.
And it's like, why do you keep, you know, you
because
can be,
she knocks it out of the park and it's better ratings. I mean, I'm yeah. sure.
No, that's why they. But yeah. you're like, if you're playing the
fellow
game,
oh,
it's the fellow contestant. If you're playing the game, what you want to do is get somebody out, right? And yeah. you're not going to get her yeah. out.
No.
So why don't you get somebody a little further down the yeah. totem pole out that you know you can that yeah. you know is your direct competition? You know, everybody's targeting the girl that clearly is one of the best there, when she's not the one you're going to knock out with that yeah. kind of handicap.
So I had a coworker, like, just go off for like a half hour talking to me about Cutthroat Kitchen.
I have not seen Cutthroat Kitchen.
But so apparently, there's a lot of like actual kind of game theory involved with Cutthroat Kitchen, because the contestants, it's one shots. It's one and done. Like, they don't use the same yeah. cast over and over. What it is you know, two people in a cooking competition are each given a budget of like $25,000 or something like that. And they can use that money to buy handicaps for their opponents.
Oh,
wow.
But whatever they spend, they don't get if they win. So you could blow all $25,000
to completely
to monkey wrench
fuck your, over
opponent, your
opponent, but now you don't get anything.
Right. But so, like, some of the things in the past have been, I'm trying to remember. Like, you can't use certain tools or certain, you know, you have a butter knife instead of a steak knife.
Uh-huh.
But then, for a seafood challenge, one of them was, all of your shrimp are encased in a block of ice.
Oh, my God.
And here's an ice pick.
Oh.
Like, so they lose the time spent chopping them out. They lose, like, freshness of ingredients
because
of the flavor, because
yeah,
of the frozen
shrimp.
And then also there's a risk of, like, physically tearing them apart getting to the ingredients.
Sure.
So, I don't know, it's
yeah.
You know, just what I need, but
another one. Well, what about, okay, so I don't watch a ton of reality TV, but Face Off
on Sci-Fi is a monster makeup and effects competition show.
Oh yeah, yeah, I've seen the previews for that.
Practical effects.
That's a great show, and I would recommend, like, because, I mean, well, a lot of times we are less interested in the drama, the manufactured drama, probably for the same reason that you guys are enjoying watching the, like, oh, I can see what they're doing here.
Yes, you can watch, you can,
like,
watch them create the narrative.
We're like, I can see what they're doing here. This is boring. Like, I want to, and so we'll kind of skip a bit.
Yeah.
Like, anytime there's just people talking. But, like, what I do like about that show is that they're pushed so hard, and I don't know if this is how it is on, like, MasterChef, but on Face Off, they will, what's the clothing one, the fashion one?
Project Runway?
Yeah, Project Runway is similar, where it's like, it's like, okay, so you have 12 hours in the studio today, and then you go home and you sleep, you have 8 hours. Then you come back, you have, you know, 15 hours in the studio today, and then you go home and you have 8 hours. Then you have 4 hours before it's, you know, and so it's uh-huh. it's almost like sleep deprivation, because
they start to lose it.
You get off work, and you get back to your hotel, and you know, no one goes right to bed.
No.
You know, they're up, they're talking, they're drinking a little bit. And so maybe they're getting like 5 hours of sleep, mm-hmm. and then they have to get up, and they go, and you're working and work, and it's like seriously physical, like running around work.
Cracking huge molds. And,
yeah, so yeah. it's fun to watch, like, people under that kind of stress still making these incredible things, and almost yeah. like a lot of, like, not surprising themselves. It's one
and
of
they're
the
watching
things,
them watching when they crack. Like, there's
that
a,
too, yeah.
On the recent season of Hell's Kitchen, there's this girl Joy who you're like, she's going all the way, and then there's an episode where she just fucking cracks.
Oh man,
she's just like, and all of a sudden the person that you're like thinking the whole time is going to win
just loses her
gone.
Shit.
Oh boy.
And so, you know, as a writer, it is that narrative that, that just, yeah. It's like, how are they creating, what is the narrative that they're creating in yeah. this episode?
Oh, for sure.
You know, so there'll be
it's the chefs, manufactured element.
Yeah, there'll be chefs in MasterChef where like 1 week you won't see them. They won't do any interviews with them. You won't see their dishes. And you can just know, well, you know, Dan's safe this week. Mm-hmm. Dan's, nothing's going to happen to Dan because they haven't bothered to talk about Dan at all.
Yeah,
your
yeah.
middle is weighted through this round.
Yeah, so... And then they're like these three other chefs that they're featuring. You're like, oh, one of them is screwed.
Yeah.
One of them is gone. And
yeah. Well, and it's like on Top Chef, they'll be like they think, as like they're going to commercial. And someone's like, I'm looking at my steak and I'm thinking, there's no way I'm going to get this done. I'm totally screwed. I'm going home.
And then you're looking at, then Pat and I are looking at each other. They're going to win the challenge.
And then, yeah, and then it's like, and then it's like, they're chasing.
He'll pull it off.
Yeah. So this happens in Face Off.
And then the dude who's talking about, like, I had this from the very beginning.
Yeah.
I don't have any worries about this at all. And they put some shit on the plate and they show a shot of me. You're like, I wouldn't even consider doing that.
In Face Off, there is... So in Face Off, they do, like, the runway thing where they exhibit all their designs, and it's like, all right, the judges would like to speak to you, you know, about your designs. And so someone will come up, and it'll be like... And the music is like... Like, neutral. Uh-huh. And then it'll be like, I thought it was... some of the best work I've seen. And the music changes to like this like dun 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 like super and when it's like, I'm really disappointed this week. And it's like when I hear it, I'm like, oh okay. Skip, 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 skip. Like, cause I'm like, oh, he's not doing well. Skip, skip, skip. It's so great.
Yeah, and because the writer in me enjoys watching how they create that narrative and how they play that narrative out.
And what I love is that they can't, because they're not hearing, there's no music when they're recording so they don't know yet that I know that they're not getting complimented, but sometimes they're like, okay, but you can tell they're like, and a butt is coming, and they're, nope, no butt's coming, like, you're just, nope, you're just getting shit on.
I also love the way that, you know, you watch the reaction shots, and I'm often wondering, is that reaction a shot of what was just said, or did they just, like, find the best reaction to what
you just said. For sure.
it really entertains me how they take reality and they turn it into fiction.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know,
it's like, this is stuff that really happened, but they are going to craft a narrative. Hell's Kitchen, you know, they craft this narrative around how awful these chefs are doing at times. And they're like, I can't believe you totally screwed up the fish. Blah, blah, blah. And it's maybe one piece of fish in a service of 100 people that got fucked up, you know? And so they take everything that they do in one evening of cooking and boil it down to the two mistakes that this person made.
You guys might consider King of the Nerds.
I would consider all these things.
King of the Nerds is great.
I would like to have time to do the rest of my life. And the problem is that, as with everything that I do, I am now binge watching all this shit. So we will literally stay up until 2 a.m. going, let's just watch one more episode.
It's like King of the Nerds, some of those kids, man, like, you really feel for their awkwardness, and you're like, I remember being a young nerd. Oh, chin up, little autistic guy.
And some of you are like, fuck that guy. I know 4 adult versions of that guy. Fuck that guy.
Yeah. Well, you guys saw season one of Top Chef. There's a guy on there called Steven, who from the beginning
Sommelier.
He's such an insufferable prick.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
There's
that
been
guy.
10 seasons or like 12 seasons, and I still remember that fucking asshole.
Because he's such an insufferable
asshole.
They
bring him back for like
he's
All
back
Stars.
He's back in a Top Chef match.
Is he? Oh my god! Because I hate him so much.
I think he comes back and he's like, I realize I was a douche.
He also
You wonder when these people watch the series later.
Is he the like foam and fusion?
Yes. And he's also, the thing is, like, he also has said, I'm a little bit of a victim of editing, because once they decide that you're a villain, it's like they never show the times I made everybody laugh. They never show the times that someone said to me, thank you, you made my day, and hugged me. Yeah. They never show that because I'm a heel.
But the thing is, that didn't matter, because interviews, he was such an insufferable ass.
That too.
It didn't matter how he behaved around other people. I'm like, wow, you need to get knocked down a peg, buddy, because you're good, but you're so convinced.
But we all remember his name, and I bet I couldn't name even two other people on that season. Yeah. So, hey, Nick.
We haven't even gotten to Nick's.
Hey, Nick.
Yeah.
Hey, Nick, show me your boner.
My boner is brought to you by Bungie.
Bungie.
The company that made Halo, the Halo series of games.
Oh, are you playing Halo?
No, I'm not a big fan of Halo. I'm actually a pretty vocal critic of Halo. But they have a new game coming out called Destiny.
Okay.
Which I downloaded the beta and played over the weekend for Xbox One. I think it's coming out for pretty much all systems except for the Wii U, including like 360 and
PS3. That's because absolutely all actual nothing comes out.
Yeah. So it's kind of like Borderlands, but it's kind of like an MMO.
Hmm.
And it's also kind of a lot like Phantasy Star Online, which like not a lot of people played. But it's a first-person shooter in the future. Humanity is visited and there's aliens and stuff, and mm-hmm. there's this big floating sphere called the Traveler that, you know, kind of changes our shit and is hanging out on Earth. And with it, it brings its enemies, these things that are chasing it and hunting it. And they have kind of, at this point, taken over the majority of the rest of the solar system and a lot of the Earth and almost like the entire moon. And, all that's left is a few stronghold cities. And the rest of everything else is kind of fucked up and more or less feral. And either controlled by these, like, four-armed monstrous guys called the Fallen or these, like, biological alien weapon guys called something else. Not important. So you're playing a first-person shooter and you get this little robot sidekick called a Ghost that's giving you commands and telling you what to do and helping you out. And providing story dialogue, and it's Peter Dinklage is the voice actor for it. So you can be like this weird glowy skinned alien race, or you can be robot people, or you can be human. Three races, three classes.
Which were you?
I picked Exo, the machine people, and the class I picked was Warlock, which is Space Wizard.
Space Wizard.
And so the Space Wizard can throw a space grenade and throw like a wide radius explosion thing, but the beta caps at level 8. So I was getting equipment and seeing things that were made for characters that were level 20.
Huh.
So clearly there's a lot more depth than the demo or live beta had to offer. But there were several missions where I'd be like, oh, I'm most of the game just doing my own thing and exploring around, and I could see other players running around doing shit too.
Hmm.
But also there'd be times where I was just playing locally on my own computer or own Xbox and not, you know, on a server somewhere. And then you'd go to do a mission and it would be like, oh, this mission's recommended for, you know, 1 to 3 guardians. And so we'll just pair you with someone that's of appropriate skill level. You get paired up with someone, you go out on a mission and kill a huge spider tank or some shit, and you get random drop rewards, kind of like an MMO, but it, even though there's so many of these MMO-type elements, I really, Borderlands, like, without the humor and with a very stark, futuristic setting, the setting is beautiful, the graphics are really great.
Yeah, it looked really pretty when I watched you playing it.
The gameplay was super fun.
There's, so are you going to get the full...
I pre-ordered it, like, right. Second or third day in, I bought it. It comes out September 9th. But you can get vehicles and drive around the planets, and you can kind of summon your vehicles wherever you are. So I bought myself, like, a faster speeder bike than the default one they come with. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, ooh, I get to pick the color and stuff like that for customization.
Did you make it red? Because
I did make it red, actually.
Frog!
Because it matched my space robot face.
Oh, okay. Your space robot face is red?
Yeah.
It's really important to match your car to your space robot face.
Well, you know, for space robots, it is. Yeah. But it was great.
Very important to space robots.
It was really great. And I didn't even try out the other classes or the races because I didn't know the beta ended Sunday. I was going to, like, go home and play after work yesterday, and I read online, they're like, so many people were playing the beta this weekend, blah, 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 and I didn't download it until this weekend. It had been open for, like, 10 days prior. So I barely got in on time to check it out, but I'm really not a person who likes massively multiplayer stuff usually, especially not RPG stuff. I have spent my time playing Anarchy Online, and I dabbled in World of Warcraft briefly. But this looks like a lot of fun. I hope it's not another Hellgate game. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it seemed like you were, I mean, and you have a tendency to, when you like a video game, sort of disappear into it like anyone does.
Yeah, for sure.
And I can tell when you only sort of like a game, mm-hmm. because you'll want to watch TV more than you want to actually play it. But if I'm like, you know, if you want to play your game, like, I'll read it or whatever. You're like, yes, like, right now, yes.
And Molly goes into the bathtub and she reads Talisman.
Right, yep. Yeah. Or like, I'm going to bed alone because he's staying up late, which isn't usually, you know, like, it's. I can always tell when he's really loving a game.
I got to say, the nice thing about my boner right now is it's actually something Pat and I are enjoying together, which
you should hope that you would both enjoy your boner. That's kind of ideal.
It's nice that we both enjoy the boner. So
it's always nicer. I mean, because you're married, so even if she didn't enjoy it, right? I mean, she just got to do it.
She doesn't have
to. That's what Nick told me.
At this point, it's the only boner she gets. Because monogamy.
Way to go, monogamy.
God damn.
Taking off another lady off the market.
Yeah. So,
patriarchy.
We have five answers from a listener.
Yes, we do. We have five answers from a listener from Australia.
Ooh.
Her name is Jessica Dalton Morgan. She is a self-described devoted listener from Brisbane, Australia. Sweet. She says, I have been listening to the podcast since the beginning when I loved the discussion/trashing of the Prometheus movie.
Well, there's a lot to trash.
The behavior
of
the... We could
have done like five episodes about fucking Prometheus.
The behavior of the scientists in that movie made me embarrassed to be a scientist.
Right.
While I have never had a religious upbringing, it took me many years to fully realize what I was called an atheist, as the topic of religion really came up. That's exciting.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I wish we could read this in an Australian accent.
I will not. I tried it that one time, and it was really terrible. There are like three words I can say in a New Zealand accent after watching enough Flight of the Conchords, and one of them is the name Brett, and then the other ones are just like random. Yeah, it's not good. Right.
The other one's
Yeah. Brett.
All right, question number one. What's the best movie you've seen in the last 30 days?
I recently rewatched Dead Again by Kenneth Branagh, noir-based thriller. Mm-hmm. Not only was his second movie as a director, he and Emma Thompson both play dual roles set in both the present and the 1940s. Mm-hmm. Emma's character in the past is murdered, and her present-day character is having nightmares, which may or may not be linked to these events. Mm-hmm. Both characters in the past are involved in music. She is a concert pianist while he is a composer. And I love the use of music throughout the movie, especially in one of the present-day scenes where you hear one of Ken's character's neighbors practicing a piece on piano, which gets more and more turbulent just before a big bombshell moment. Robin Williams has a cameo playing a very straight part, and Derek Jacobi is a very creepy antique dealer.
I don't think I've seen that.
Dead Again, I have, and I really enjoyed it when it came out, and I rewatched it recently, and it feels a little trapped in the 80s.
A little dated?
A little, but I mean, it's got a very Hitchcockian kind of feel to it. Mm-hmm. It's got Robin Williams in a fun cameo role as sort of a dick psychiatrist.
Hmm.
Is
it anything like Dead Alive?
No.
Oh, that's
no, it's nothing like Dead Alive. It is very much noir. It's very Hitchcock in that idea of the characters are trying to solve a mystery. There's a character that may or may not be guilty of a crime.
Oh.
And if he is guilty, then he is posing a direct danger to another character.
Sure.
And
by the time you find out just before the characters find out, and so you have all that anxiety and that's
kind of cool.
Super Hitchcock.
And there's a nice twist to it where you're like, oh, holy shit, that changes everything moment. Which is kind of cool. So
I'll watch that.
Yeah, I like it.
Question number two is, who is your favorite atheist character?
I think my favorite is Sheldon Cooper, being a young scientist like myself. Although I work in plant biology, I don't think Sheldon would be my friend given his opinion of biologists. I also admire that he was able to survive being raised by an evangelical mother but never turned to religion.
Yeah, you know, I haven't watched the latest season of Big Bang yet.
That's a good one. There's
the big debate about whether or not it's nerd face, basically. And I accept that debate, and I still think it's really funny.
Yeah.
I think it's written well, and I laugh at it anyway. And I guess maybe that's my years of vilification that I'm able to laugh at myself.
I think it's just the fact that you're a comedian in general.
Yeah.
I mean, vilification was your entry point, I guess. So it's easy to think of it that way, but you probably would have been a comedian even without vilification tennis.
I think the more and more time that goes by in The Big Bang Theory, if you go back and watch those first episodes, like, Howard is a fucking super creepy, like, rapey guy.
He really is, yeah.
He really is.
And if you and there's very little... I mean, Penny is really the only woman character on screen, and it's not...
They've added a lot more women into the cast.
Now, all of the favorite parts, all the reasons I keep watching are the women of that show.
Mm-hmm. Amy Farrah Fowler is my spirit animal. Like, if I was a scientist, yeah.
And Bernadette is great, and even Penny is, like...
They've made Penny better.
She was kind of dumb in the beginning.
She's still dumb, but now she's... They've given her some... Okay, so she used to be
dumb. She's not dumb. She's just not nerdy smart.
So, she is a little dumb, but she's... It used to be that she was dumb and pretty and an actress.
And the joke was that she was dumb.
And now they made her sloppy and kind of lazy, and they gave her a little bit more of a, like, hick angle because she's actually, you know, because she's from Nebraska. So they gave her all this extra stuff.
And she has drive, and she's had a character arc, and she's had development.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a real character now. She's not
and
just two-dimensional.
Her relationship with Leonard is more in-depth. There's more depth to it.
Absolutely.
Than just the nerd lusting after the pretty girl.
And I really like Big Bang Theory.
I'm an attractive guy, and I'm with an attractive woman. Comedy ensues.
I really like the Big Bang Theory, except that I would say, like, one out of every five jokes, I'm like, ha 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 ha, because he's a nerd. Ha 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 ha. Like, but that's just for the regulars. I realize they got to throw those in to keep it on the air.
For the mundanes.
Yeah.
Okay, question number three. What is your geekiest hobby?
For my day job, I work as a research academic at the University of Queensland. I am currently working on protecting bananas and plantains from Panama disease by discovering resistance genes. Panama disease, caused by the Fusarium fungus, essentially wiped out production of the cultivar Gros Michel, Big Mike, in the 1960s. This was replaced by the Cavendish banana we are all familiar with. Banana flavoring used to make banana-flavored sweets is based on the sweeter, creamier Gros Michel, which is why banana sweets don't seem to taste like the bananas we have today.
Huh. I love fake banana flavor, actually real banana
Gros
flavor.
Gros Michel bananas are still grown in Southeast Asia. Here is a link to someone trying one for the first time, and there's a YouTube video we'll link to.
Okay.
In my spare time, my main passion is music. I have been playing the violin for over 25 years. I have taught myself some piano and will start playing cello soon once I have an instrument. As well as playing in the local orchestra as principal violin and serving on their committee, I like to arrange pieces for different instrumentations using music input software such as Sibelius.
Wow.
The existence of the Internet Music Score Library Project, IMSLIP, which hosts digital copies of music scores, which are out of copyright, has aided this endeavor greatly, as sheet music is quite expensive to buy.
Eric Knight knows about that.
Or Molly Zupon.
I'm a musician. I can't read music. Well, I'm not a musician, but I play in a band, and I can't read music, and I can't write music.
Or sing well.
Also, you're not very attractive.
Yeah.
Also, he's a nerd.
No, that's a good thing. Like that about you.
Oh, thanks. Well, I'm glad that's the one
your
thing.
Your attractiveness
like
really
me.
Could get bumped up a bit, though. Just as someone else is sitting across the table from you.
Well, you could pick a different chair.
I could pick a different chair. I could also look a little better myself. I may
make
an
Nick
effort.
Stare at me.
Put
for
a little lipstick
while.
On. I mean, really, just freshen yourself up a bit.
I'll wear some makeup for the next one. All right.
That sounds good. For the listeners, Tim. Do it for the listeners.
Did she have more for that one? Sorry.
Nope.
Okay.
All right.
Question number four is, what is your favorite sandwich?
My favorite late supper is to make a grilled cheese on toasted grainy bread. I will add slices of tomato under the cheese, sprinkle some oregano. I sprinkle some paprika on the cheese and also grind some black pepper.
I love grainy bread. I love bread with seeds in it.
Tomato doesn't belong on a grilled cheese sandwich.
I like cheese and tomato sandwiches. I miss delicious grainy bread with seeds in.
For the record, I barely think meat is allowed on a grilled cheese sandwich. I think a grilled cheese sandwich, the primary protein, the main ingredient should be cheese. Herbs and spices and maybe small vegetable-y stuff is okay. But not like whole slices of tomato. No dice.
All right.
Not for
me. You don't like tomato, though.
All right.
I like raw tomatoes, yeah.
All right. Question number five, what's the stupidest thing anybody's ever said to you about your atheism?
Knowing I was an atheist, somebody asked me what my Bible was. At the time, I answered Darwin's Origin of the Species, but I didn't mean it. They mean, what's your Bible? They mean, you know, what's your...
What's the book that drives your belief system?
What's the thing that makes you, what would you swear on?
My belief system is not so easily described as I could put it in a book.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
it's an interesting question. If you're elected to Congress,
what would you swear on?
And I wouldn't put my hand on fire.
They let you pick whatever you want. They let you pick now.
Constitution on a Kindle.
Yep, she swore on the Constitution.
Maybe it was the Declaration, actually.
Well, it was one of the Declaration. Yeah,
I would probably do the Constitution.
If elected office, sure.
Because I mean, part of your oath is to uphold the Constitution, generally. Right. I mean, depending on the office. So, I mean, that seems like an appropriate document.
But even the Constitution has its, you know, its flaws.
If someone had to ask me what's my Bible, I think I would say the Dark Tower.
Well, yeah.
I mean, that's just the closest thing I've ever had. You have something that you could think of as, like, to you, it's almost sacrosanct in the sense that, like...
I don't know. If it was me, I'd probably... The thing that I have what I would say the closest to a spiritual experience is when I go to like a national park, because those places are amazing.
So like a Jellystone travel guide or a Yellowstone travel guide?
A great big book, a picture book of the U.S. national parks. That's probably what I'd pick if I had to pick.
Swear in a picnic basket.
Or maybe, you know, a DVD copy of the Lord of the Rings trilogy. That
sure,
might be okay.
Yeah. What about you, Nick? What's your Bible?
Man, I don't know. Maybe a Bible, but ironically?
No. No irony allowed.
You gotta fucking pick a real... What would you do?
I don't know, because I have, like, super ethical issues with one of my favorite books that I might choose, because it's Ender's Game.
And
I would not pick that, even though I have, you know, a strong attachment to the story and fond memories and all that.
What about, like, I don't know, what about like a punk album? What's something that you feel like helps contribute to
your family? If we ever redo our five questions, I want to include this question.
What's your Bible? Yeah, I like that.
What would you swear on if you were told you had to swear and you could pick whatever book or media thing that you could swear on? What would it be?
I don't know. How about, like, I just put all of my favorite books into a Kindle and then just bam.
Ooh, what about you're swearing on the Marvel, you're swearing on the 616.
On the Marvel continuity?
Yeah.
Continuity. Yeah. Maybe Iron Man Extremis.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, there you go. That sounds like...
Oh, Planetary. Duh, the Planetary Omnibus. Yeah, that's what it would be. It would be Planetary. Yeah, absolutely.
I think it would be a lot more interesting if people got to swearing based on this conversation instead of just, well, what Bible are you going to pick?
I'm all for more swearing.
Yeah.
Fuck shit damn. That was a good episode.
Motherfucker!
Thank you for your answers.
Hey, before we go, can I plug something? You're not going to say yes. We're in the middle of the Fringe right now. So if you're in Minnesota, I have three Fringe shows that are going on through Sunday. I have Top Gun the Musical, I have PowerPoint Karaoke, and I have Jumping Jack Kerouac, in which I actually dance in front of an audience, which we haven't actually previewed in front of an audience. So right now, I'm freaking the fuck out about that show.
Molly and I are also in PowerPoint Karaoke. Are you judging and performing?
I'm just judging and performing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All three of those shows have at least two more performances. I'll link to them in the show notes, and you can go to fringefestival.org and look any of them up.
Just search for Tim Wick and find all the shows.
I've seen the aftermath of some Ersatz Top Gun the Musical rehearsals, and I got to tell you guys, you got to go.
Oh, my God.
Like, you got to go.
Improv rehearsal clip.
We saw some props. You got to go.
I wrote the show, and I wrote the lyrics and music with Chad Dutton, and it is so fucking awesome. I don't know how to... I mean, I usually am, like, super neurotic about the shit that I write, but this show looks so fucking amazing.
I'm very proud of it,
and I want a lot of people to go see it, because this is probably the only time you'll get to see
it. My co-worker's in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
So, anyway...
Well, if you have answers you want to send our way and answer our five questions, send them to 5questions@geeksofthegod.com. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook. Please give us a rating on the iTunes. Otherwise, we'll see you next Tuesday.
Yay. Go to the Fringe.
Bye.
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 2/3 of us have seen Guardians of the Galaxy, and we totally could have spoiled that shit for you. You're welcome.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks.
We're geeks. We're geeks without God.
We're geeks.
We're geeks. We're geeks without God.
We're geeks. Geeks without God.
They don't do it before the festival opens?
Nope.
That's weird.